approve it in this matter.
Yes. Session, session. Do you, please test your mics, make sure everything's functioning. Do we test the witness mic?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, it's approximately 9:22 a.m. on December the 7th, 2009. We are at the sixth floor of the DNA building in Aganjaguam, and this is for OPA-PA-09-007, and this is the formal hearing on the merits for the appeal of Guam Education Financing Foundation, Inc. Will the members of the Office of Public Accountability please identify themselves for the record?
Joseph Torres, Quick Public Auditor.
Lourdes Perez, Audit Supervisor.
Ann Camacho, Admin Officer.
If I didn't say it for the record, I'm Anthony Camacho, and I'm presiding as a hearing officer for this proceeding. Will counsel for the the appellant is not represented by counsel, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Will the representative then for the appellant please identify himself for the record?
Richard Inman, Chairman of the Guam Education Financing Foundation.
Yes. And we call not being represented by counsel appearing pro se. Is that your status this morning, Mr. Inman?
Yes.
Thank you. Will counsel for the purchasing agency please identify himself for the record and any institutional representatives with him today?
My name is Benjamin Abrams, Assistant Attorney General, representing the purchasing agency, and I'm here on bond this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Abrams. And we have one interested party who has made an entry of appearance in this matter. Will the counsel for the interested party please identify herself for the record and any institutional representatives with her today?
Good morning. Voice 10 for IBC. Your name is Miguel Vidal, representative for IBC.
Thank you, Ms. Tang. Before we proceed, do the parties have any witnesses that are present in the conference room this morning?
I have two possible witnesses who are seated in the spectator area at this time. Shall I excuse them?
Yes, please. I ask parties to basically ask their witnesses to proceed to the waiting area outside the hearing room.
There are no witnesses for the purchasing agency that the purchasing agency intends to call during this appeal hearing in the hearing room at this time.
Okay. Are any witnesses for the other parties present in the hearing room?
No.
Mr. Inman, are all your witnesses outside?
Yeah.
Yes, they're outside. Okay. I understand no motions were filed that we need review before we proceed. Is that correct?
That's correct, as far as I know, Mr.
Lutz. All right. Are there any preliminary matters that we need to review before we proceed?
None that I'm aware of.
Okay. Well, then we're going to proceed with the opening statements and other parties, and essentially... No, I think you can confirm that they're not calling him as witnesses. Oh, and before we proceed with the opening, Mr. Inman, I believe there was a request earlier by Mr. Hand for a telephonic link for these proceedings. Do you still require that link today?
No.
Thank you.
Mr. Camacho, on
yes.
this point, the purchasing agency would like to... have at least one witness testify by this telephone link with the speakerphone, but that won't be, of course, until after Mr. Inman
case, but I thought it was appropriate to mention that now, and I believe my office has already contacted the public auditor's office about that, so I just wanted to...
Which, okay, understand that it was merely to allow Mr. Hand, who's the president for the appellant, to listen to the proceedings and perhaps participate in them via telephone, not to actually give testimony, Mr. Abrams. Which witness are you proposing to call in this manner?
It would be Ali Ventiato. She is here in the other appeal, the GCIF appeal, to testify. She couldn't be here this time.
Does she know?
She's on our witness.
Okay, and at what point in the proceeding do you wish to call Ms. Ventiato?
Well, it's not entirely... In all likelihood, we will, and that would be after Mr. Hinman presents his case. When he rests and it's time for us to go forward, we would then like to have her testify by telephone.
Mr. Hinman, do you know who Ms. Ventiato is?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and this is an area where typically... when a witness testifies, one of the reasons why we have live testimony with the witness present is to observe the demeanor of the witness while the witness is giving their testimony. One of the reasons we observe demeanor is to assess credibility. Of course, having a witness testify via telephone would be second best, or third best, rather, to having a witness testify live. Do you object to having Mr. Abrams call his Ms. Limpiaco and have her testimony be given telephonically?
Well, based on what you earlier said about the need for the witness to be here in person, we've elected not to arrange for people on our side who we could have had many witnesses testify telephonically, but I know Ms. Limpiaco, and I don't object.
So there's no objection?
No.
Ms. Tang?
No.
No objection. Thank
you. Okay. So we are going to allow Ms. Ali Limpiaco to testify telephonically should the purchasing agency call her during their case in chief. And, Mr. Abrams, you do know that if she's going to call us, or basically she's going to testify telephonically and you're going to call her in that manner, she's literally going to have to call us at 4671-473-3016, and we'll have that set up. We're going to have to get a solid time to do this should you call her as a witness, okay?
473-3016. Can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
Alternatively, I can set up a conference line that actually records the call and will email it to you. And I know that there's some concern about recording. If there are, then after the conference call ends, it will email it to
I think we can adequately capture
the
testimony.
Okay. So we've
done
it before. Okay.
Are there any other preliminary matters that we need to delve into? Okay.
Had we known that we would have already set it up, we were, because the last time we had a conference call, so it's just that this comes as a surprise to us, so we're not yet, we weren't prepared, but it won't take us that long.
Well, it won't be now anyway. Yeah. The earliest would probably be after lunch.
Okay. All right. We'll set it up during the break.
And we're going to proceed pursuant to the order dated November the 9th, 2009. Just so the parties know, we're going to proceed with the opening statements of the parties. Mr. Inman, as you are the appellant, you will proceed first with your opening statement, followed by the purchasing agency. And then after the purchasing agency is complete, then I'm going to allow interested party IBC to either comment on the record, their opening essentially. That will be followed by the appellant's case in chief. That is where you call your witnesses and put evidence on the record. That will be followed by the purchasing agency's case in chief, and that will be followed by the interested party's comment. And then we're going to have the closing statements of the parties, which will follow the same order, or excuse me, yeah, it will follow the same order as the opening statements. Are there any questions about that schedule? All right. Then we're going to proceed with the opening statements, which I know you're not an attorney, Mr. Inman. It's just a brief summary of what you believe the evidence in the case will show. Okay?
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you having me here. Chief, appreciate this opportunity and allowing you to let us operate pro se, because as we've said before, Chief's mission is to provide educational facilities for the people of Guam. We're a not-for-profit. That's what we're set up. That's what we're there to do. And we're a reluctant appellant when we started into this process, and when the process was initially disclosed to us and we heard that we were a more expensive bidder, our initial approach was to say, well, that was we gave a good run at it. We were a bit surprised because we thought we knew what it cost to build schools, having just completed four schools. But we said to the best man, let the best man win, and stepped aside. It wasn't until we received a copy of the official statement, and really it was in March, while the IBC team were raising their bonds or their certificates of participation financing. And when we read that document, we determined that there had been a substantial escalation in price from what...
Excuse me. At this point, I believe that there is a... Excuse me, Mr. Edmund, I just feel that I have to make this objection. And I am making an objection to any reference to the materials that were subject to the granting of the protected order. And that would include this statement that Mr. Inman now makes reference to. We don't know how he got it, but the fact that he got it doesn't mean that it isn't protected.
Well, he's made several statements, Mr. Abrams. Which particular statement, specific statement, are you referring to?
Well, as I understood Mr. Inman's comments just now, his opening comments, he's referring to a financial statement or a statement of participation involved in the finance, which is very intricate and very sensitive. And if I'm correct in so understanding Mr. Inman, I believe we're within our rights to object, as that is... subject to the protective order. Thank you, Mr.
Commissioner. Mr. Inman, in response to that objection?
We downloaded this official statement off KRAM when the initial article came out describing the sale of the bonds. And as anyone at GEET or anyone that's ever sold bonds realizes, the Securities Act of 1934 requires that an official statement be released so people, potential investors in bonds, will be able to read what they're getting and know what they're buying. As Gita has said, the bonds were one day from being sold, so the official statements had been finalized, they'd been sent out, and they were in the hands of the public. Hopefully they were in the hands of the investors. And so if, in fact, this is determined to be secret information that we shouldn't have gotten our hands on, then we really can resolve this very quickly. I mean, we just say everything's in the hands of the public auditor. Presumably you've got the documents. Nothing we have is meaningful, but I hope somebody will take a look at what it would cost to build the school and be able to make a decision one way or the other, because the case that I seem to get from the other side is always, well, we've been through the right process. there's documents out there, they're all protected, you don't need to, you can't possibly know them, and therefore you have nothing to say.
Let's back up a little. The protective order only covers the proposal and any information contained in the proposal. If I understand your argument correctly, these were the public documents that were issued as part of the, public issuance or the public sale?
The sale of the certificates of participation.
Okay.
So the Rule 15C212 requires that underwriters, before they offer any securities for sale, have a document that describes all the material facts related to it and doesn't leave out any material fact that would be misleading if it were disclosed.
Okay. Well, as these are opening statements and not the actual presentation of evidence, I'm going to allow your opening statements. Please proceed.
Could I just comment on that?
Yes, Ms. Tang.
Of course, I join in Mr. Ingram's objections, but I'd like to make it very clear. I think there's a misunderstanding as to what document we're talking about. Mr. Inman refers to an official statement, but he's actually holding a preliminary official statement, and that was the very document that was kept out in the GCIS case. Mr. Plaintiff attempted to move that into evidence. And so I want to make sure that's very clear.
He's not entering the document in evidence at this time. He's merely making his opening statement. This is not the presentation of evidence.
Well, I understand. I just want to make it clear that he refers to one document, but he actually has in his hand another document. And we object to the submission of that document.
We're not there yet. So I'm going to overrule the... Okay, go ahead, Mr. Abrams.
15C212 requires a certificate, and Ms. Garcia would attest to this, I'm sure, that the preliminary official statement is the document investors use to make an investment decision about buying some bonds. And it says, the preliminary official statement is, except for permitted omissions, final as of this date. Permitted omissions are the rate on the debt, principally, and so that implies a change, but certainly the size of the school to be built, the project amount itself, is not going to vary by more than a few percent. So that's what that is. But anyway, let's move on from that. So based on this document that was released and was available on KUAM for anybody to download, it appears that the school and the project being proposed by IBC is significantly more expensive than what we proposed to build. We fully believe our proposal met all the requirements. In fact, we were judged in the scoring just a few points below them. I think their score was 690-something, and ours was like 6 points less, 600. I can't remember the exact. But I'm going to keep this short. We don't want to be a part of the problem. We want to be a part of the solution. We wanted to at least raise this up to some level so that somebody... we'll take a look at it, and the public auditor, we assume that's what your office is here to do, and so that's all we're trying to accomplish. So what do we hope for in the end of this? What we hope for is that somebody will be able to review the documents, protected and unprotected, and make a good decision for the people of Guam, so they won't spend too much money that they don't have to spend and that could be used in many more vital ways. So we want a speedy resolution to this. We want the people and the team members at JFK to get back into their home as soon as possible. And we ask you for a speedy process for the rest of the trial. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Rimmon. Mr. Abrams, your opening statement.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. I don't have much to add to what we've already stated in our agency report. What I would like to point out is that Mr. Inman is judging from his written submittals and his opening remarks just now, seems to be predicating his objections to the procurement process not on any specific violation of the applicable procurement regulations of applicable law, and therein lies the similarity between this appeal and the other appeals. You see, I can refer to it as a companion appeal, which has already been decided, GCIF.
neither of these appeals, and I think this is a very strange and unique situation, but neither of these appeals allege any departure from the procurement regulations. There is, it is completely devoid of that. What he has is a preliminary statement, which over my objection he was allowed to read into the record, but by its very nature, it is preliminary, and therein is confidential and subject to change. It's an opening, like a draft statement. That's the first thing. It doesn't matter if Mr. Inman or anyone else downloads this off of a particular website. The fact that it got there was wrong to begin with. So any use that he's made of it is just as wrong as it was for it to be there in the first place. And the fact that it was wrongfully displayed on a website doesn't mean that it's any less protected. But that aside, as I said before, this is a preliminary document, subject to change, subject to refinement, and the provision of law that Mr. Inman read out that is inarguably applicable to this preliminary statement and the ensuing official statement, whenever that were to come out, basically is a truth in prospectus type of thing. It's a regulation which means that when you encourage people to participate in the financing of a project, you have to do so on the basis of correct and accurate content. So whatever's in there has to be accurate and has to be truthful, or they're going to run afoul of the SEC laws. So it doesn't have anything, doesn't mean anything beyond that. Now, what is in that preliminary statement, even though it's subject to change in the official statement, which we don't have, is basically designed for investor consumption. This is something that's designed to promote the financial participation in the project. So the content of that and the content of something that's designed for consumption by the purchasing agency is definitely going to be different. Square footage of the size of the school, whether or not it has a gymnasium, whether or not it has this many or that many square feet, neither here nor there, as far as the investors are concerned. They're looking for a payback on their investment. They're looking for secured recourse. They're looking for things like that. How many square feet the school has is really not within the scope of the purpose of that document. And, you know, Mr. Inman has, his company itself has made, and I believe Ms. Tang is going to go into this in further detail, but his own company has had official statements in the past, and there wasn't any specific mentioning of the size of the school or anything in those statements either, because that's not the purpose of these documents. So, again, to recap, there's no violation of procurement regulations alleged by the appellant. He's basing his whole appeal on the content of a preliminary official statement, which is not really meant for the purchasing agency's consideration, but investors' considerations, and it's protected. So, with those brief remarks, I have nothing further to add to our opening statement. Thank you very much.
I'm just waiting for Mr. Okay. Go ahead, Ms. Tang.
Good morning. GEFF today has filed a protest. It has proceeding in pro se because it is a nonprofit. But it is a nonprofit that is very profitable. And I think that as such, And on top of that, the directors, I mean, these are, you know, gentlemen who've been developers involved in huge projects, such as Mr. Inman, Mr. Hand, Mr. Wilson, Phil Flores. There's no reason why an attorney can't be here today. They filed a protest that stopped a project, a huge project. They can't be bothered to hire an attorney to defend these allegations. What do? They have a celebrity lineup defense. Mr. Flores is here at the last hearing. Granted, Mr. Inman was on Guam. I see on their witness list they've got Mr. Kester Bauer, Mr. McMinch, and several other people, several other university professors, and you know, none of whom have, I believe, any personal knowledge regarding this project. Is this the defense? Is this why we're here today? Is this why there's no school? The allegations they make are quite serious. They GFF claims, in its protest, that, among other things, that, let me just get to the right page. That the price is an issue, that their price is lower. Well, I think that's easily verifiable. First of all, they have not gone through negotiations. GFF had not had the benefit of all the negotiations and the processes involved in negotiations with the government. And having built a school, several schools, prior to a similar project of this on Guam, financing leaseback, they should know better. GEFF, of all people, all companies, should know that during the negotiation phase, there are a lot of things goes on. And both allegations, you simply can't say, well, our proposals are the same. The final proposal seems different, assuming that the information is correct. Therefore, we're going to protest. So, these allegations have no basis. Considering their history, they should know better. They claim that there are non-conforming deliverables. They argue about the square footage of the building. And the allegation is, well, we built Ukadu group of schools for $112 a square foot, and this one is costing $400. Therefore, it's non-conforming. First of all, I think the office of Pepegado has access to procurement records easily verified. That's simply not a true statement. It's completely unsupported by any evidence other than their belief that the statement, a simple statement in a preliminary official statement about a square footage of rebuilding out of the whole project equals the total square footage of the entire project. Third argument, third allegation they make is that IDC failed to provide financing. And they talk about in their protest how they were able to get AAA financing, AAA bonds. Well, that's great for us to do because we had compact impact funds. Of course, that's secure. The federal government is going to pay. They always pay. But there's no evidence that IBC did not comply with the financing requirements of the RFP. There is much discussion about the preliminary statement and the applicable law. The preliminary statement is just that. On the left margin of the first page, it specifically says it's subject to change. And then an official statement will be issued. Of course, just GEFF knows that because it went through the very same process selling the certificates of participation in 2006 for the Ukadu school. So, just so there's no confusion, there's a difference between the official statement and the preliminary statement. One's preliminary, it's subject to change, and one's official. And that in the case of IBC, an official statement has never been issued because it didn't go on the market, there was no financial closing. It was stopped by the protest. And in terms of the statements regarding the applicability of securities law, I am by no means a securities law expert, section 15, 17 CFR, section 240.15C2-12, cited by GSF. I'm not sure that it refers to an official statement as being accurate, but in this case, we believe that our preliminary statement was accurate and did not violate any disclosure requirements under federal law. We are here today because GSF thinks that its proposal is better than IBC and we should get the job. And the allegations that are made are basically unsupported and spurious. The evidence will show that the allegations are not true and that IBC was submitted the best proposal and complied with the RFP in all respects. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tang. Ms. Redman, you may call your first witness.
Okay. There's an administrative ruling that where the FCC sets forth what they expect underwriters to provide to investors.
Mr. Inman, okay, you can address these arguments that were made in your closing argument. This is the time to call your first witness. Do you have
a statement before I call the witness?
No, we need to call your first witness and start presenting evidence. You can address the arguments that they made in your closing statement.
Okay.
Okay, so...
Dr. Kasperbaum is out now.
Okay, please call Dr. Kasperbaum.
At this point, I would like to call upon the hearing officer to request an offer of proof from Mr. Emmer with respect to his witness. And the reason I'm doing so is that Ms. Tang and John Wattenberger and I have not had a listening witness list. We can't, for the life of us, come up with anything that would be plausibly relevant by this witness with respect to Mr. Emmer's appeal. A simple offer of proof from Mr. Emmer would clarify that and may result in saving a lot of time and the otherwise been listening to things that don't make any good.
Okay. Well, Ms. Rimmon, an offer of proof is merely, it's kind of like asking a question, why are you, what is the purpose you're calling this witness for? So, could you please talk into the microphone so we can have your, that's one.
The purpose of calling the witness is to attest to this need for extra funds in the Guam Department of Education. And what can be done with extra monies as it relates to that might be made available if one proposal is chosen over another one.
That really isn't germane to this hearing's appeal at all. And it's not even conceivably relevant of Mr. Camacho. I don't think, with all due respect, I'm sure this witness is knowledgeable in terms of what he knows, but that doesn't have anything to do with the issues in its
the issue is, I'm sorry, Ms. Tang. Okay, so they're joining that objection. Mr. Inman, I'm going to allow the witness to testify. However, I will admonish you to basically prove the allegations, or his testimony should be, the questions you ask should elicit answers which would tend to prove the allegations which you've made, which the appellant has made in their appeal. Do you understand that?
I'll do my best.
Okay, please proceed. Before we go, we're going to swear the ask a witness to be sworn.
Can you solemnly swear that you will report yourself as an attorney and counsel of this court, uprightly, that the testimony that you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Has the witness signed in? Thank you, Mr. Kasperbaum. Mr. Inman, you may proceed.
Officer Camacho, I had a chart made, which is virtually the same chart that was included in our hearing. Can I turn this over?
Yes, you may.
Okay.
And for the record, when you said this is a copy of a chart, which chart are you referring to?
In the hearing brief, it's the last page of the hearing brief.
Okay, so you've actually filed this with, this is a exhibit to your
hearing brief?
Okay, okay. Please proceed.
Well, and Dr. Kasperbauer, first of all, thanks very much for your time today. And what I am hoping to do here is point out what I've learned, and maybe the preliminary official statement was preliminary, and it was. And when I close, I'll tell you what it should be preliminary about, because it's out there for investors to make an investment decision. So that's an important consideration. And everything else has been protective, but as I understand it, the public auditor's office...
this is a direct examination. It's not an extension of the opening argument. I realize the government is pursuing implicit that he should be held to the same rules that that IBC and the preparing agency has survived by.
Okay.
We join in the objection.
Okay. Well, Ms. Redmond, please ask the witness a question. And it is the, please understand that it is the witness's answers to your questions. That's the actual evidence. Okay? Please proceed.
Can I give him a copy of this chart so he doesn't have to?
Okay, can you, do you have enough copies for the other counsel?
I don't know. Okay.
Okay, can you, Ms. Redmond, it's traditional that we also provide the counsel copies of the documents we're going to present the witness.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Dr. Kasperbauer, could you tell us a little bit about your experience with education on the island of Guam?
Mm-hmm. And good morning, everyone. Yes,
objection, if I may, lack of foundation. There's no evidence that this witness, Mr. Kasperbauer, has any personal knowledge regarding the information that is presented in this exhibit, which is called cost comparison to U.S. versus ICC.
Well, Mr. Okay, let's hold on. Okay, hang on. Okay. Mr. Inman, how do you respond to the objection?
Let's not look at this exhibit until my closing statement. It seems to be creating a lot of difficulties here. I'll return to the other question.
Okay, and then Mr. Kasperbauer, before we proceed, just as a point of order, what is the numerous notes you had before you? I'm going to ask basically, Mr. Inman, that you hold those notes, okay, as I'd like you to testify based on your personal knowledge.
These notes?
That is correct. I'm going to ask that...
this other fault is a serious... I'm a member of the Guam Commission on Education Certification. We have a meeting coming up, and I have the folder here. I was reading it.
Oh, that's right. But I'm going to ask, Mr. Inman, can you please hold, please remove Mr. Kasperbauer's notes for the duration of his testimony?
Sure.
At least put them to the side. There you go.
Dr. Kasperbauer, could you give us a brief description of your experience in Guam with education?
Is it brief? That's pretty hard for an elected official. I initially applied to teaching Guam as an ag teacher in 1957, some 50 some years ago. And I was employed at the University of Guam, hired at the University of Guam after being on the faculty in Iowa and in New York, and continued to serve after being a professor at the University of Guam, administrator, and currently professor emeritus. While administrator at the University of Guam, it included 6 years as the dean of the College of Education, which was and was responsible for the teacher preparation program, school administrators, teaching of courses in school finance, budgeting, and so on. I was elected and appointed as to the Territorial Board of Education, responsible for the entire public school system on Guam, and during the 9 years on the board, served as chair or vice chair of that board for 8 years. As a member of the Board of Education on Guam, as it relates to this, I served on the National Association of State Boards of Education as a member and was elected one of five from throughout the nation to serve on the national board representing all the western states, Guam and the Pacific.
Mr. Inman, the public auditor will take judicial notice of Mr. Casper Lahr's long experience with the Guam public educational system. Please proceed.
Dr. Casper Lahr, in your opinion right now, what would be the best way to utilize additional funds, maybe even up to $1,400,000 of funds, that by the Guam Department of Education?
Yeah, there's no foundation for that opinion. Doesn't even know that he has one, but there certainly hasn't been any foundation laid for this witness to testify about a specialized field such as finance. But from what we heard and from what we know by judicial notice, he's an educator. But he doesn't have any qualifications, at least as far as the record goes, that would enable him to, A, have an opinion that would be admissible here on finance of school projects, and number two, to introduce that opinion. Thank you.
We can't all talk at once here. Okay, Mr. Edmonds, you made your objection. Ms. Tang?
I have read this objection. The Board of Education's objection.
Okay. Mr. Inman, do you have a response?
I wasn't asking about finance at all. I was asking what would happen if there were an extra $1,400,000 made available to the Guam Department of Education. Based on his experience in dealing with public education on Guam in the past.
Another objection would be conjectural. It calls for absolute speculation.
Well, I'm going to overrule the objections and allow you, Mr. Inman, to ask your question and allow the witness to respond. Please proceed.
Larry? Could you repeat the question I was asking, Larry? What would you do with extra money?
What would you do with extra money?
I'm here because I'm interested as a longtime resident of Guam, as a administrator, teacher, board member, senator, chairman of the Committee on Education, that we get the biggest bang for our buck. Over 50% of my tax money goes for education. I have a stake. I am a stakeholder in education on the island. I'm here to talk about not only where my tax money goes as a former senator, chairman of the Committee on Education for 8 years out of, and being on it for 10 years, responsible for over 50% of the budget, author of the legislation that provides for what we call a municipal lease provision for schools, and being aware that the Assistant Secretary of Education, I believe, was here recently and said our students cannot succeed with their science lab at George Washington High School. We need money for labs. I know, having authored the legislation, that refurbished over half a dozen or more dozen schools on Guam and provided for the building of the four new schools, the mechanism for it. I know that an elementary school can be built based on the legislation I authored for the size of the school for $5 to $7 million, and if we can save $5 or $7 million anywhere along the line and still get a quality school that's necessary, as a taxpayer, I want to see that money going to build a school. I want to see the money going not only for education, we're talking Gov Guam money. And when I read in the paper and hear that the Guam Memorial Hospital is over $5 or $7 million behind in funded payments, I want to be sure we get the bang for our buck.
I'd like to interject here. First of all, this is a narrative response and non-responsive. I realize that there's a lot of leniency here, but this is way beyond, I think, what the rules allow. And it's not addressing any of the issues, the question that's posed.
Same objection, Mr. Kamal.
I'm going, Mr. Inman, in response to the objections. Do you have a response to their objections?
My response is that we're trying to demonstrate that there's a critical need here and that the need can be fulfilled and offer an opportunity for that, but I'm not a lawyer, so...
Certainly, we will stipulate that if there's extra money here, there's critical need in DOE. There's no question about that. That's not excused. I mean, we will stipulate to that. There are a lot of other needs. There are a lot of needs in the school, science classrooms and teacher salaries. We're all aware of that, painfully aware of that. We certainly stipulate to that.
Without admitting the relevancy of this testimony, I would stipulate along the same lines as Ms. Stang, that this testimony is going in a different direction than the issue that we're calling it here. That's our objection, but same situation.
Mr. Chairman, would you accept that stipulation, or do you wish to proceed with Mr. Kaspar's testimony?
I don't want to waste any more of Dr. Kaspar's time, so I appreciate him very much coming down.
Okay, well, do you accept that stipulation from...
Yes.
Yes, okay. Mr. Kaspar, as these proceedings are not yet over, I'm going to admonish you not to discuss your testimony today with any of the other witnesses or any other party until these proceedings have ended. Do you understand that?
I don't know who the other witnesses are, sir.
Okay, but nevertheless, I just give you that same admonishment as these hearings are ongoing. Thank you for coming today.
Can I take a brief recess?
Yes, you're excused subject to recall by the parties.
No objections to the recess.
That's all. I'm okay.
You're okay?
Okay.
Do you have...
No other witnesses.
You have no other witnesses?
No other witnesses.
Okay. Do you rest, Mr. Inman? That means
that
you've
ended your... I want to be able to talk about the numbers, and I don't know when I can do that. I've wanted to do that ever since I've come to these hearings and just wanted to say, here's what we think. Let the case out.
Okay, can we... Mr. Inman, I'm sorry. Mr. Kaspar is asking for his notes back.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
So if I can do that now, I'm happy to do it now. If you want me to wait till later, I'm happy to do it later.
When you say numbers, do you have a witness that will testify?
I don't have a witness. No, I wanted to go over the chart. Maybe I could call myself as a witness.
That's not the norm, Mr.
Okay. I'll do whatever I have to do.
Okay. So you have no other witnesses?
No.
Okay. And then you rest, is that correct?
I want to be able to go over my chart. And I don't know when you say...
Appellant not having any other witnesses, then we are going to proceed with the purchasing agency's case in chief. Now, Mr. Inman, just so you understand the procedure, okay, they're going to call the witnesses just like you did. You're going to have the opportunity to make objections just like they did. When they are done with what we call the direct examination, that's when you can proceed with your cross-examination. Do you understand that? That means that you can also ask any of the witnesses that they call questions as well. Okay? However, we try to keep the questions limited to what the witness testified to during their direct examination. Do you understand that? Yes or no, sir?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Abrams, you may proceed.
Well, I think it'd be a good idea to have maybe 5 minutes, because I have a motion to make. You could probably anticipate what the motion's about. But before we proceed, there's a procedural motion that has to be made, probably a joint motion by IBC and the purchasing agency. But if we could have 5 minutes to get this together, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Abrams, when you say motion, Are you aware that pursuant to the November 9th, 2009 scheduling order, we had a motion deadline?
Mr. Camacho.
I'm not done, Mr. Abrams. On November the 23rd, at 5 o'clock, no motions were filed.
Mr. Camacho, I'm referring to a motion to dismiss for failure to establish the case when he rests. That's always permissible in any civil hearing or civil proceeding, and that's the motion that I'm talking about. This is not a pre-hearing motion.
Your motion is untimely. It will not be heard. You have a witness.
This is the equivalent in a bench trial to a motion for a directed verdict in a jury trial. This is a motion for a directed decision based on the paucity of evidence and the lack of evidence to establish his appeal. It's not a pre-hearing motion, Mr. Camacho. It's a motion that any lawyer makes when the other side that has the burden of proof goes forward and rests without establishing this burden of proof. That is, it couldn't possibly have been a motion that was subject to the pretrial order or be a pretrial. It's not a pre-hearing motion, Mr. Camacho.
Okay. Quote, the party shall file and serve on the other parties any motions regarding this matter. The deadline for motions has passed. It passed on November the 23rd.
Can we have a five-minute recess?
You may have a five-minute recess, but we are going to start with your case in chief.
I understand.
Please proceed. You have 5 minutes. We're going to go off the record.
Okay.
Okay, we are back on the record at 10:26. The appellant has completed his case in chief. We are now beginning with the purchasing agency's case in chief. Mr. Abrams, you may proceed.
Yes, Mr. Camacho, thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to clarify that what I was asking for before the break is a judgment as a matter of law, because Mr. Inman has failed to make a case on the patient case for GEF. So I stand corrected to the extent that you would consider that to be a pretrial motion. It's a motion typically made when the plaintiff or the party bearing the burden of proof fails to establish a prima facie case as judging as a matter of law. In a jury trial, it would be a directed verdict in favor of the party making the motion. So I do want to protect the record by making that motion a judgment as a matter of law, since Mr. Inman is arrested. Otherwise, we are not calling any witnesses, and we will arrest you.
Ma'am, we also obviously join in that motion. I also put a record of Mr. Camacho. You were correct in that the order did provide that all pre-trial motions, including 12B6 type motion to dismiss, should be filed before trial. And again, I guess if you allow me to say the motion of the judgment as a matter of law, and we request that, we ask that the motion is in favor of the preparing purchasing agency, the motion be granted in favor of the preparing agency, purchasing agency. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, we were referring to Rule 50.
I'm sorry, what?
Rule 50.
Of the Guam Rules of Civil Procedure?
Yes.
Which don't apply to this proceeding.
Well, in terms of the motion, the type of motion that
we file. A motion for directed verdict, in essence. Yes. Is that correct?
Yes. A judgment was not as well.
For just a second. I'm going to go off the record.
Back on the record.